about if you get help from Joe, you should acknowledge it. I mean that. I don't mean that you necessarily should work alone. That's not the way life is. Go ahead. Have bull sessions. Get all the help you can. That's being intelligent. But be decent about it. Be honest. Acknowledge the help. No reason why you shouldn't get help from Joe if you think he's smarter than you are. I hope you'll be doing that all your life. That's intelligent. Acknowledge Joe's help. Actually, write into the paper. As my roommate Sally says, and I agree with her, and so I write it down here. Nothing wrong with that. Don't try to conceal it. Don't try to make out that you did all this yourself when you didn't, and you probably won't. There should be some of these kinds of statements in all the papers, I suspect. What I am doing today, you see, we're changing the course schedule. It says today that the lecture is to be made by Dr. Sides. But the Army released me in time to get back last night. I was working for the Army yesterday. So here I am, and I've been a little concerned because the lectures in the last few weeks and the ones you're going to have from now before until the exam have not been over the book. As I said the other day, they have been supplementary to it. But I've been a little uneasy about that, and I'd like to spend today going over the book a little with you. I do wish that this were a living room and we were sitting around a fireplace and we could chat. And if you can make it into that kind of a situation, please go ahead and try to do so. Interrupt me and I may call on you. I think probably the most practical way to proceed here, to try to spend a little time with you on the part of the book that you're supposed to be covering now and that you will be examined over, is to pick out some parts that may perhaps point up some things that might be important from some point of view and see how we think together about them. We can do this. If you have your books with you, and I don't suppose you do, most of you, on page 331, if you do happen to have the book along, there's a kind of a summary at the end of chapter 12, I think it is, chapter 13, the chapter which deals with the major maladjustments. I do hope you have read this part of the book. This time we have today is going to be much more worthwhile if you have, and if you haven't, well, you haven't, and that's too bad. But as far as I'm concerned, that's the way the world is. On page 331, there's an attempt to summarize what turns out to be 10 characteristics of the major maladjustment of interest from a semantic point of view. Um, Let me run through them and see if you react in any way. If not, we'll go on to something else. Try to be thinking in terms of the task you have to write a paper about the possible revisions of this part of the book. What would you revise here? Would you add something? Would you delete? Would you maybe reword? Revisions would usually take the form of additions, developments, elaborations, or deletions, or rewordings, or reorganization. You might want to move chapter 15 ahead of chapter 12 or something. And that pretty much tends to be the limits. The rewordings, by this I include something that could be very important, and that has to do with style, the tone, whatever word you want to refer to, what you feel like when you read it. These characteristics are, first of all, a lack of consciousness of abstracting with consequent, number two, identification of the levels of abstraction, of inference with description, of description with nonverbal observation and experience, and so forth. Now, if you have read this material, you will immediately remember, maybe, some of the examples of delusions and hallucinations and so on, which were described. I think you'll find, if you haven't yet looked at this material, I think you'll find much of it almost as interesting as the Daily Island. Even the recent editions. I'm thinking about the letter writing that seems to have broken out. Unconscious projection is seen most obviously also in the delusions, hallucinations, and the hysterical ailments, the physical disabilities for which there seem to be no physical reasons. The allness attitude has shown an excessive certainty, an overvaluation of words, as such. Undelayed reaction, impulsiveness, overreaction. This is especially obvious in the manic kind of disorder, and in the psychopathic personality, which I suppose is for most of us the most intriguing of all the human misfirings. Psychopathic personality cases are so varied, and they are such mixtures of talent and utter foolishness. Hardly ever does the human form take on such fascination as in the psychopathic personalities. The rigidity, absolutistic, elementalistic, these words meaning to you? Two valued, even one valued orientation is exhibited in the rigidity and the unresponsiveness of the schizophrenic and the delusions of the paranoid. Infantilism, egocentricity, socially useless or harmful selfishness, an incapacity for friendship and affection, an exaggerated self-defensiveness, ill will, bitterness, hostility, depressions, feelings of inferiority and unworthiness, guilt, self-accusation. These are seen especially in the depressed patients. And sexual maladjustment. And I discuss especially three types: excessive prudishness and lack of mature sexual feelings, promiscuity, and sexual perversions. Does that sound like a brief description to you of maladjustment, human inadequacy? I'm most interested, as I have tried to emphasize over and over in the text, not in the forms of these kinds of behavior which are found in hospitals. The value to us, I think, of the hospital cases is that of the value of a microscope. We see extreme forms more easily. We can appreciate them more easily. But what is of the greatest interest to us, it seems to me, are the forms and the degrees of these patterns of behavior which we tend to exhibit, or our friends, members of our families tend to exhibit, the people around us. I said I was working for the Army yesterday. This was a training course for personnel managers and consultants and counselors, in which the Army has, I can't remember, it's either 3,500 or 35,000. And part of the day they were demonstrating by role-playing techniques some cases. This was a case method of instruction. And so persons would be chosen to play the role of a man and his superior who were involved in a problem. It's interesting that most of the problems they talk about are problems involving the incompatibility of people who are working on the same job or in the same office in the same situation. And in one case, two people were acting out one of these problems. And they were experienced personnel people. And I gathered that what they were doing was pretty realistic. The one person was supposed to play the role of the guy who had the complaint. He was a foreman. And he was complaining about a worker that was driving him crazy. And the other fellow was supposed to be the foreman's superior officer who was making an attempt to be reasonable. But the foreman was behaving in a way that really is very common. His language was full of allness. He was certainly identifying levels of abstraction. He was making statements that were inference statements as though they were the gospel truth. They were descriptive. He was overreacting by voice and by gesture and in other ways. He was being almost completely rigid. There was only one possible way to look at this matter. He certainly was expressing ill will and bitterness and hostility and egocentricity. I couldn't help but remark, I was supposed to be a kind of an observer from out of town, and I couldn't help but but remarked that this behavior, first I ascertained, is this fairly ordinary behavior that you're demonstrating here? Yeah, sure. Well, I said, it looks to me to be almost exactly like the kind that you see in psychopathic hospitals. And I would very seriously wonder whether this is the kind of thing that you can handle by deciding that some afternoon you're going to have to talk to Joe about this and find out what the facts are. I don't think the facts, as Joe sees them, are very relevant. That probably this man needs, and maybe Joe does too, maybe the other guy does too, the worker. But certainly Joe, from his behavior here, needs some counseling, some psychotherapy, or some education, or something more than an hour's conference with his boss. Maybe he needs a course like you're attending, I said. And this appeared to be news to them. One man, who was an older man, said, well, now, if what you say is true, then 75% of the men I know in the Army need a psychiatrist. It may be true. In a recent study, Midtown Manhattan, I may have mentioned, I don't know, by a rather good team of investigators, psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists, using a rating system, which can be rather well duplicated, it's well described in their book, concluded that about a fourth of the people who live in Midtown Manhattan in New York are seriously maladjusted, mentally ill, as they would call them. About a fourth are well, and the rest are in need of help, but they can toddle to work every day at least. That means about three-fourths of them are not well, according to these judges. What's your own experience? Are the statements I read about anybody you know? You know anyone who behaves that way? You round people who do this very often? In some degree. Would you revise the book at this point? Would you say this is an exaggeration? That is the statement that these kinds of behavior are of interest to us because of the in their forms and degrees that we see in people generally. Would you revise the book at that point and say you just don't see behavior like that generally? Would you, if you do acknowledge that such behavior exists, would you revise the book by giving that behavior a different kind of description? Would you want to question that you can talk about it within the framework of the process of abstracting language? Would you prefer to use some other language for talking about this behavior that you think would be better? These are the kinds of things that you might want to do if you're going to revise the book. Might be other things too. Don't hesitate to speak up if you have something to say. I wish we might have some discussion. I realize this condition is not good for it. But on page 337, there is a part of the book that I think is of particular importance. I mean, what is in this part of the book is of particular importance. the problem that is discussed is important. It's headed the meanings of normal. And there follows a discussion of two or three or four pages, maybe a little more, about the various ways in which we use the word normal and the part that this notion plays in our orientation and our personal development and so on. I suppose most of us use a statistical concept of normal or meaning of normal. The average is normal. Most people are normal. It's normal for the weather to be like this in Iowa and California and Florida. And I don't know whether we're bothered by the fact that almost everybody uses this sense of the word, usually, by the implication that the excellent person is therefore abnormal. It's abnormal to be a very good piano player. It's abnormal to make A's as much as it is to make flunks. Does this bother you? What do you do with this? There are people who are bothered by the possible effect that this way of using the word normal has in the direction of making us overvalue the mediocre and conform to an average mode, which tends to pull down the best of us, while it also frustrates and creates tensions for those who can't measure up to the average. So this concept of normal as average can have some very harmful effects. But it's the most common kind of meaning, I think, that is given to the word. Interrupt me at any time if you have any comments or questions. Would you revise the book at this point? Would you deny that the statistical point of view is common? Would you deny that this has any bad effects? Would you want to change this paragraph, which I have attempted to summarize? There's another meaning of the word normal that we sometimes encounter. It has a medical meaning. You're normal if you're not sick. And that's about what it means. This can be defined a little more exactly. You're normal if the doctor has patients in his waiting room that need him worse than you do. This is a kind of an operational definition. This means if we had enough doctors, we'd all be sick. This is a sort of practical way of looking at it. With one doctor for every 800 people in the United States, there are just so many of us who can be sick. The rest of us are normal, medically. You want to argue with that? You want to revise that some way? You might. You might very well. You may feel that I have overstated it. I think if you were to go through this book, if I were to get out a revised edition, I think one of the things I would do would be to tone down some of the statements. I hope I could do that without making it less interesting to read. I see no virtue in being dull, but I do see virtue in being as accurate as possible. And I think some of these statements in this book, and some of you may think most of them, are exaggerations. Be on the lookout for that when you write your paper. The better job you do of spotting things like that, the higher grade you'll get. This is one time when you really can't polish the old apple. I don't think. I'll be interested to see if anybody manages to do that. Because if you say that you have no revisions to make, then you are supposed to defend that. And be sure you do a good job of it. But I can't imagine a book that should not be revised. Another definition of the word normal that is sometimes used, and I think not always with very much awareness that this is indeed what is being said, but it is said by implication a great deal, that there is a way to be normal in a social sense. You're normal if you're at the party. You're normal if you're not ostracized. You're normal if you belong to the club. You're normal if you have friends. So there's a kind of a social sense. This isn't always the same as being statistically normal. As I say in here, these names are out of date. You'd want to revise this book by bringing it up to date, I should think. I say the Marx Brothers are not statistically normal, but they're socially normal. Social normality tends to be defined by group approval. There's a legal sense of the word normal. You're normal if you're out of jail. It's much like the medical sense. It's sort of a negative thing. You're normal in the eyes of anybody who doesn't know any better if you haven't been arrested, even though you should have been. This is a particularly interesting meaning of the word. There are times when the people who are statistically normal are legally abnormal by a strict interpretation of the law. It's against the law to throw things along the highway. I suppose most people are abnormal. Legally. So on. And there's another sense of the word normal, and here you might really want to do some revision if you don't agree with this, or if you feel that it hasn't been made clear, if you think it needs to have more development, or maybe should be deleted entirely. I call it the engineering sense of the word normal in the book. Maybe I use the word par. I don't think I use the word functional, though, which I would use today. You see, you could find a better word for this, you may think. That's another way to revise. How could you improve the terminology? And what would you mean by improvement, by the way? Be sure that your paper makes that clear, what you mean by improvement. What are your criteria of improvement? Either state them quite explicitly, or see that the context makes it pretty clear. Why do you call these changes you propose to make improvements? From whose point of view, or for what purpose, because of what possible effect would it be an improvement? Well, the engineering sense of normal is that of the good garage mechanic who doesn't particularly care whether your car is average or is acceptable to the neighbors. even whether it needs him in a medical sense, or whether you're out of jail with it. What he, all he wants to know is, what's it made of? How's it constructed? What's it supposed to do? Is it supposed to go 25 miles on a gallon of gas? Well, if it's supposed to, then it should be doing that, and if it isn't, it's not normal. It doesn't matter what the average car is doing these days. It doesn't matter what the neighbor's car is doing. It doesn't matter what the law says it should do. This car is supposed to go 25 miles an hour on a gallon of gas. It's not behaving normally unless it does. Well, it's sometimes easier to determine par for an automobile than it is for a human being, but if you're so constructed and so experienced and so taught and tutored and conditioned and so on, that you should be making a B in this course if you were to work, say, a reasonable amount of time, 2 hours for every hour in class, and you're making a B, you're normal. And it doesn't matter what the average grade is, or what's acceptable to your friends. But if you're making a C, you're not normal, and if you're making an A, you probably aren't either. You're overdoing. Or would you want to throw that out? Well, then throw it out. And state your reason. Revise it. Because the book, I think, says that. Now, if you don't think it should say that, revise it. Well, again, be sure to interrupt me if you have something to say. I'll just keep talking. I'm trying to suggest what this assignment's about. On page 367, there's a passage that begins and goes for several pages that I think is rather important. It's headed Special Disabilities. It's in the chapter entitled Our Common Maladjustment. To me, there's a very great difference between, let's put it in terms of persons, between the person who has a problem, he's staying away from people, he's withdrawing. He doesn't go to parties and so forth. He stays in his room because he has a very profound feeling of inferiority. He has a very low opinion of himself because of something that possibly happened when he was younger and about which he's in conflict. This is the kind of thing that tends to be talked about in textbooks of psychotherapy or psychiatry or abnormal psychology. That's one kind of problem. I think it is very different to have something that is quite obviously the matter with you. To stutter, for example, even. Or to have an arm amputated. Or to be a midget. Or to be 7 feet 7 inches tall. Something that you can point to in the way of a disability or a disabling characteristic, a potentially disabling characteristic. Now, if such a person is withdrawing, you understand this withdrawal behavior on an entirely different basis. And you would deal with it on an entirely different basis. And I think I say in this part of the book, I have not read it today, but as I remember it, I think I say in here that this is very different. should be handled differently. And I may say, if not in this part of the book, somewhere, I'm pretty sure. And if I don't, well, don't revise it. In general, in clinical work, or in education, or as parents, or as employers, or personnel managers, or whatnot, anyone who is dealing with other human beings, trying to understand them and be helpful to them, I think that the best assumption to make is not that the troublesome behavior is a symptom of a neurosis, of an emotional disturbance. I think it is a much better assumption that the troublesome behavior may be related much more to some pretty tangible fact about the individual. Maybe he really can't see very well. Maybe he's hard of hearing. Maybe he behaves the way he does because he stutters. Maybe he behaves the way he does because he may be wrong, but he thinks he's ugly. Or the girl may be wrong, but she thinks she's not attractive. She thinks she's overweight. She may not be, by some standard. But to her, there is something tangible. Now, I think that it is almost always a more constructive approach to deal with the tangibility. And then, if after you've done all you can in that way, there's something left, we'll deal with it. But don't begin by assuming that there are rats in the Freudian basement. Now, if I say this, and I do in one way or another in this book, over and over again, if you'd like to revise this, and many people would, revise it. As ably as you can. Now, this is a rather extreme point of view to many people. You'll find many statements in here, I think, which represent to many people quite extreme points of view. In fact, many people would call this a wild book. If you think so, suggest revisions. Be yourself. As ably as you can. But reflect as you make these revisions, as well as you can, your understanding of what it is you're revising. You are in a course where you're supposed to be reading a book, among other things, and understanding it as best you can. You are under no obligations to agree with the book. To accept it. In fact, if you are too obviously doing that, you can't make a good grade on this exam unless you really agree with it. But then it's just inconceivable to me that you could agree with this book so well that you couldn't, for 1 hour, suggest revisions. I don't think any book could be that good, could it? Got a hand up? What? And still want to revise it? Yeah. You want to make it simpler, change the terminology, shorten the sentences, use other examples, do all sorts of things. and not change anything, essentially. You could do this.
What you're saying is probably
not. Huh?
What you're saying is probably not impossible.
You mean the book is so well written that you couldn't improve the writing of it?
No, I'm not talking about the book. I'm talking about the book.
I'm not suggesting that that is one possibility, that you find the book acceptable. You agree with everything in it, but you do wish it were more clear, had better examples, were reorganized in some way, or were shorter, or something. Well, yes, it seems so to me, quite possible. But I would certainly expect that there would be also quite a little revision suggested because of basic disagreement. You'd want to delete some of it, or you'd want to change it and make it really say something else, wouldn't you? Well, sure. I imagine that if Hayakawa were to read this book, he'd revise it. Basically, we probably agree pretty well. Some of them, no doubt. I don't think there is such a thing as a standardized general semanticist. If you're going to become, suppose you were going to go ahead and on your 45th birthday, you will be hailed as the leading general semanticist in the world. I would be mighty surprised if the things you said on that day would agree quite exactly with what I have said in this course. Within what you would mean by general semantics, there would be room for a great deal of divergence, of difference, variation. Now, all right.
On these revisions of the examples you use here, would you rely on our years of clinical experience?
No, you're to rely on your experience.
Just on our own, or anything we might pick out of other books?
Oh, sure, or everything you know. But this is one of the things I hope the course tends to make you do, to rely on your experience, to trust your nervous system. Intelligently, with judgment. Our time's up. Good luck.